And that's that.
Yep. And we are here.
Cool. You got your notes together?
Pretty much.
Cool. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Scary Dad Podcast. This is episode 39. 39, one away from 40.
Almost over the hill.
So, this one is going to be, we're going to be talking about some cults, some death cults.
And not fictitious.
Not
actual, actual cults that have existed.
Not Fire Woman or Sonic Temple. Those are cool cult, but that's not what we're after. Ian Astbury is not in this band. This is dropping on July 10th of 2017. So happy 4th of July. Hope you got some fireworks popped. Hope you're not one of the few people that woke up on July 5th missing a finger or a toe or whatever.
Some appendage.
Dude, I'm on a neighborhood like Facebook group, you know, so we keep each other abreast of like, you know, events going on or garage sales,
right,
or, you know, that kind of stuff. One of the neighbors posted this thing, and it's like, you know, as a reminder, fireworks are illegal in the city of Houston, and we will not hesitate to call the cops. And it took everything I had. Like, I didn't post it, but I'm like, oh, you're going to call the cops on the 4th of July and report that you heard fireworks. Yeah, they're going to put all the detectives
in the SWAT team out
there. Yeah, they're going to put all the detectives on that case quick, you know.
I'm still on the Facebook page for my old subdivision out in Richmond, and they are notorious for just a ridiculous amount of fireworks and stuff. For Christmas and fireworks, they just go overboard with everything. And every year, I just like watching just the chaos that ensues, because you have people that hate the fireworks, people that love the fireworks, and those in between telling them they need to just get along. And they got the pet owners that just can't stand their dogs being unhappy and stuff, and it's insane, man.
You know what makes my dog happy? Well, first of all, my dog's scared of everything. So the doorbell rings, she goes and hides in the bathtub. It thunders, she hides in the bathtub. I bang my knee on the cabinet, she goes and hides in the bathtub. It's like a fraidy ass dog. But you know what makes her real happy?
What's that?
4 Benadryl and a couple of cheese. She goes and lays down in her spot. She curls up. She takes a nap. Fireworks going off outside. She's snoring.
She's not a care in the world.
Problem solved.
There's always the thunder jackets. I don't know if you ever saw those before.
Oh, yeah. My dog doesn't want to put on clothes. So
the wise only person, dog. It's a very wise dog.
The only person that ever got my dog to wear clothes was my sister. And she kept the jacket on for like long enough for a picture, and then she started rolling around trying to get it off. So
you know, my English bulldog, I used to fish a lot, like I mentioned before, and bulldogs can't swim. The legs are too short and they're too dense. They just drop like a rock. And he had a life jacket he'd wear on the boat with me and stuff. So it's the only dog I ever had that actually wore clothing. But it was acceptable for the time. So.
Keep them from sinking. Gotcha. All right, so let's talk about old business. We'll do our history segment for July 10th. Not tremendously long. On this date in 1821, the U.S. takes possession of Florida from Spain. It was a purchase. They didn't invade or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that's important because then we got Florida Man. Florida people are crazy.
Yes, they are. You give us lots of good news.
All right. This date in 1913, the temperature at Death Valley was recorded at 134 degrees Fahrenheit.
Global warming.
Hottest temperature ever recorded on Earth. 104 years ago.
Yep. The global warming. It's cyclical, man. It's funny because, you know, when I buy collections, I get old magazines all the time. I mean, there's all these 70s magazines I have that are talking about the global cooling.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's actually some warming ones, too, from back mid-70s to late-70s, if I'm not mistaken. It apparently is cyclical to go through global warming, so we're fine.
Yeah.
It's going to start cycling back there.
See, the thing is, the thing about a global warming concept, I don't have a problem. They'll say the science is settled, or if you're in any way dubious, then they're like, oh, well, you're anti-science. The problem is that it's not a matter of being anti-science whenever you look at, like you say, at the history, and there's always something. But here's something that I know. You ever been down to Surfside?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, for those who maybe aren't from around here, Surfside is this little beach. You just drive about an hour and a half straight south, and you land at this place called Surfside. And it's one of the few places around here where you actually can catch waves if you're a surfer.
You can fish off the beach and everything.
And this was several years ago, but we went down there. We were hanging out, drinking some beers, and popping some fireworks, and just being people on a beach. And my wife was like, I started to gather up some trash and throw it away. She's like, don't do that. Let's take it home and put it in the recycling. And I glanced up, and there is this tower that's spewing off, like, metric tons of black smoke right into the air. And I'm like, in my entire life of drinking beer, I could not possibly create an hour's worth of that pollution. So it doesn't matter what kind of light bulbs I use. It doesn't matter what kind of car I drive. I could go out and burn plastic all day every day for the whole rest of my life, and I wouldn't be able to compete with one smokestack of one factory. But those guys all have credits from the government that let them do it.
Right.
So whenever it's a back and forth, like, does it occur? Sure. Does man cause it? Sure. Am I going to feel guilty about it and try to change my ways? Not really.
Right.
Because I'm paying enough for the tax credits that these companies are getting to pollute shit.
Right.
So that's where I stand on that, is like, is it happening? Sure. But tell them, not me.
Well, my main thing is, you know, if solutions were more realistic, I would go along with them a lot easier. And, you know, because, for example, one of the go-to ones to talk about, wind power. Okay. You know how many wind farms they have in Texas now, mm-hmm. down in South Texas and everything, and just all over the place. Right now, wind farms make up not quite 2% of power usage in the United States. Think about this. If you were to double the number of windmills we have right now, you'd be at 4%. Mm-hmm. It's not a realistic solution.
It's not only is it not a realistic solution, but the wind farms, the windmills...
They kill birds.
Well, they kill birds. Extracting the metal, shaping the metal,
burns more CO2,
building it, transporting it, and standing it up, and then maintaining it. It takes more fossil fuel energy to create and maintain the thing than it will ever produce.
Right.
So it in and of itself is a net negative. And they're backed up by the power grid anyway for whenever it's not windy. And
same thing with ethanol.
So it's one of those things that, like, it's not an actual solution. It makes you feel good whenever you look at it, but it doesn't. It's not plugged into anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
the logical solutions like nuclear energy and stuff like that would be right along with it and helping out. But yeah, until this starts making sense, you know, it is what it is at this point. You know.
Well, and then you've got competing ideals. So like if you're a corporate, you know, if you're ExxonMobil or, you know, ConocoPhillips or whatever, your entire business model. And this is not a capitalism or anything kind of discussion, but your business model to keep your shareholders happy, to keep your stakeholders happy, to mm-hmm. keep your employees happy, you're on a growth model.
Yeah.
Okay? So their entire purpose for existing is to sell more gas.
Yeah, to make more money than previously.
To sell more gas and to sell more than last year.
Yeah.
So there's no real incentive to create stuff that causes them to sell less gas. And then whenever somebody does come up with a plan, then the government steps in and says, well, we're going to start taxing you by the mile now because your gas-saving cars, the gas tax that you're saving, it's causing a shortage in the money that we need. So now we'll just tax you by the mile. They don't want you to not...
They don't want you to not smoke because they're going to lose so much tax revenue.
Right.
You know, they want you to go ahead and...
Yeah. So it's always a double-speak thing. That's why I get dubious, is it's critical thinking. You've got to follow the money.
Yeah.
So... That's where we get into our conspiracy things whenever we talk about, you know, the what was it just recently? The Alex Jones, mm-hmm. the conspiracy guy, he got press credentials with the White House. So he's able to sit in the press room and ask questions of the president. Fair enough. You know, whatever, right? But then the mainstream media gets pissed off because he's had a lot of crazy shit in the past. And one of the things, like, I don't know if he claimed it or if he was just reading off something or whatever, but he suggested that all the kids that have been kidnapped over the last several decades, that they've actually got a colony on Mars, and it's, you know, that's where they got their people to farm it out. So you've got this child slave labor colony on Mars. And then NASA came out and was like, we do not have a child slave labor colony on Mars.
It holds water.
And my thought was, that is precisely what someone who ran a child slave colony on Mars would say.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you can't prove that they don't have it.
Right.
All you can do is take their word for it.
So, they're not going to say, well, yeah, we actually do. They're not going to admit it. Show pictures. Well,
damn. You found us out. We would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those kids.
The damn Alex Jones.
All right. Notable births. This date, 1856. Speaking of energy, Nikola Tesla.
Yeah.
Think if he would have gotten some of his stuff not stolen by Thomas Edison.
Yeah. Things would be a little different now.
Different
huh?
world. 1914. Joe Shuster, co-creator of Superman. Mm-hmm. 1926, Herman Munster,
yep.
Mr. Fred Gwynne.
Also, what is it?
Car 54.
Joe Pesci. Car 54.
And he was in...
My Cousin Vinny.
Pet Cemetery.
Pet Cemetery. Yeah, incredible actor, man.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. Love his voice.
1942, Get Your Horns Up, Writing James Dio.
Hey!
And now, for something completely different... You all have Holy Diver stuck in your head for the rest of the podcast. You're welcome. All right. 1947, Arlo Guthrie.
I got an awesome Arlo Guthrie story I got to tell.
Tell it.
I used to work on a cruise ship as a chef. Okay. The cruise ship I worked on was the first one was a Delta Queen paddle wheel boat, 5 stories tall, set a whole bunch of people. They traveled the river system of the country all the way up to Minnesota and stuff. Well, they used to do charter cruises every once in a while where like a group or organization would rent the whole boat for a week. And it was just their people on there. And Arlo Guthrie rented the boat out for a group one time. And he was the coolest trip I've ever taken on that boat as far as work goes. Yeah, there was one woman I remember, she entered the boat with no shoes on. And I did not see her wear shoes for a week around that boat. He didn't want the wait staff wearing uniforms that they didn't want to. They were able to come down in jeans and stuff. And he tipped everybody on the boat. A really, really outstanding guy. He sang for us a couple nights. It was really an awesome trip, man. I wasn't really familiar with him at the time, and I definitely got familiar with him after that. Really, really cool dude. That was probably 1994, right around there. But old Arlo Guthrie. Pot was being smoked all over that boat for that trip.
Oh, yeah. You can imagine. And she's not scary, but just because she's hot. 1972, Sofia Vergara.
She is hot.
She's hot. Hey, I remember back when Maxim magazine first started popping out.
Yeah, like I used to have a subscription to that one.
Late 90s, she was pretty regular, mm-hmm. one of their girls, and she did well for herself.
Definite MILF.
Notable deaths this year, this date, 1989, Mel Blanc.
Bidi, 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 bidi.
All folks.
Yep. That's a man who is. That's a cultural icon, you could say. Just his impact.
For sure.
Huge,
dude. So many voices. So many characters. So many like. They don't like none of. They all sound like him, but all of them sound themselves.
Right.
Like they're all personalities.
Right.
Like he imbued true personality into each character. Especially whenever he's voicing both characters in the same scene.
Right.
You know, that's so cool.
But you know, how long was, you know, Looney Tunes just a mainstay in everybody's lives, man?
You know, and we're all never political, but always dogging on the government. So when the government deregulated, said that, you know, infomercials could be counted as educational. So now instead of Looney Tunes and Saturday morning cartoons, we have to go to Netflix because otherwise my kids see transvaginal mesh
implants.
Like,
have you been catching the Preacher episodes yet? Have you caught up?
No, I haven't caught up with that.
Oh my god! There's a whole speech in the opening scene of the first episode of Cassidy explaining to him about what happens with baby foreskins. He's like, there's millions of these foreskins, and they put them in the lotions you women use. And Tulip's like, no, they don't. You feel those little foreskins on your face. It's really a great, great scene.
Gross. Well, that's all I got for old business. You want to try some new business?
Yes, we can get into a little bit of that. I don't have a tremendous amount to talk about today, but it's fitting considering our topic today. First, I want to talk about a movie currently in post-production. They finished shooting. They're wrapping up right now. But I got a chance to talk to Michael Mahal, who is the he's one of the directors or writers of this particular movie, but it's called Party Bus to Hell. Fully filmed in Las Vegas. It's the story of a group of hot and sexy young people, mid-20s probably. They're heading out to Burning Man. Car breaks down, and next thing you know, they're the victims of a demonic satanic cult in the middle of the desert. So, starring one of the definite scream queens of now, Tara Reid. Okay. Sounds like it's gonna be a pretty good movie, man. The interesting plot, got some good actors in it and stuff. So, that's one film to look forward to. It'll be coming out later on this year. And on another topic, the Red Band trailer for Cult of Chucky has been released.
Okay.
Annabelle doesn't have shit on Chucky. It looks like it's going to be another good one. Definitely going back to the more traditional Chucky, getting slasher away from Bride of.
The more slasher, less funny,
yes.
more scary.
Yeah, definitely. You're going to have some good jumps and everything in it, you can tell already. And the young boy from the first one is actually a man now and is going to be in this one. So
nice.
It's looking like it's going to be a pretty good movie. Check out that Red Band trailer if you get a chance. And that's it for today.
Boom. So,
cults.
What are we going to talk about today?
You know, we talked about families recently, and this would be considered, you know, these people consider themselves family.
Mm-hmm.
Normally with just one patriarch that runs everything.
You said you didn't want to throw it in there, but do you remember where you weren't in Texas whenever the Branch Davidian
thing? No, I was close enough to where I got plenty of the news on it.
Happened.
I was in high school, senior in high school when it happened.
If you were a senior, then I was probably like freshman or sophomore or something like that. And I remember, because they were surrounded for a few days.
Yeah.
You know, and I just remember like the bloodlust that everybody had.
Yeah, about, just want to go and take them all out.
About all these people that were inside of this compound that, you know, obviously they shot a bunch of cops. Mm-hmm. So obviously that turned everybody sour on them. But I remember even at that young age, sitting there watching, I was like, man, what must it like be like to be inside that building and to look outside and have all those guns pointed at you and know that everybody, because they're watching TV.
Yeah, and you can't tell your story.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear what you have to say.
And you can't leave because there's people on the inside that are holding you there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go out because there's people on the outside that'll shoot you as soon as you step out.
Right.
Just that helplessness feeling.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about it is that particular scenario, you know, has been the subject of horror movies before. I mean, there's that one, it's not Outbreak, it's about these people trapped in an apartment building, just old school New York style tenement. Mm-hmm. And they're all contracting a rabies type virus, turns them into zombies. So the government just locks them in there, shuts off all the power and communications with everybody, and they're seeing these people, they're being left in there to die, and they can't tell anybody what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's same situation. It's a scary situation to be in.
So cults.
Yes.
Crazy situations. A lot of times they, from the outside, we see cults and we think of people that are deranged or needy or just wanting to believe in something. From the research that I did, though, a lot of it is not as... It's a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
You know, some of our more cynical people might think that all religions of any kind are technically a cult, but it's not really, that's not really how it works.
Yeah.
Because what you'll have is, whether you like it or not, most of your social norms are kind of based on an ethic, whether that's a Christian ethic, whether that's a, you know, Muslim ethic, whatever, you know, your kind of, your social structure is built on a, not even necessarily a system, but just a structure of beliefs and shared values and norms. And a lot of your cults are just offshoots of those same similar sorts of things. It's the difference between a Presbyterian and a Methodist.
Yeah, it's taking it to the extreme.
But then these leaders and they start using manipulation. They start using different things to manipulate their flocks and make them do things that they wouldn't normally do.
Right.
But it's pervasive. It's like it's a slow burn.
And the other
you just don't show up to church one day and be like, "Hi," and they're like, "Hi, cool. Let's all eat a bunch of drink a bunch of Kool-Aid and kill ourselves."
Right.
You know, it takes a lot of time.
Another major difference is like the church across the street from my house. I can go over there and leave early and not show up for a few weeks, and they won't wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, leaving these particular groups was not always an easy thing, if not impossible. So that's a big difference with the two. It's an idea of control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times they look for certain people with certain attributes to make it easier to control them.
Well, what's up first?
Let's see, who are we going to talk about first? Where are we at? Let's just go into one of the biggest ones there is. You know, one that is very controversial, that Matt and Trey Parker love dealing with. And that would be the Church of Scientology.
Okay.
I actually know a Scientologist. We haven't talked to him in a while, but they, I don't find it as prevalent around here in Texas as it is in some other areas. They're picked on a lot, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as their core beliefs, whether you believe them or not, it's up to you, but it's a religion based off of a science fiction book,
mm-hmm,
by L. Ron Hubbard. They believe that they're all the descendants of Xenu. Hail Xenu. I think we should have a Hail Ming.
Let's throw down Hail Ming.
See if they get a Scientology church set up in that route, in that vein.
Dude, for all I know, those guys are Scientologists. So let's
sorry.
Hail Ming.
There are 7,000 different Scientology groups that exist throughout the world. It's a worldwide group. The money within Scientology is insane. And they're a huge names in Scientology. There's an alien Tom Cruise. Travolta, chef from South Park, which is
he was one for sure.
Yeah. And on that vein of control, the reason Chef is no longer on South Park is because they didn't care for the fact that Matt and Trey were.
He got insulted when they made fun of Scientology. Whenever they made fun of everything else,
right?
Because they were equal opportunity to make fun of us.
They didn't care.
And I think it was. I don't know, it was Matt or Trey or somebody posted something that was like, when we made fun of the Mormons just bought a commercial after the show that was like, if you're curious about this, call this number, we'll talk.
Yeah, they did.
But they weren't, they probably were mad, like anytime you make fun of somebody's beliefs, people get mad. But when cooler heads prevail, they're like, hey, let's use this as a teaching moment.
And of course, you know, Matt and Trey let off after that happened. Not. They doubled down, mm-hmm, and really, really sort of tearing into them. And, Scientology established in the 1950s by L. Ron Hubbard, like I said. Sort of evolutionary step from Hubbard's self-help movement that he called Dianetics. So he already had people that were followers of his and his beliefs and everything, and he kind of just went ahead and took it a step further. It's recognized as a religion in most countries. Some countries have actually banned Scientology, and they don't allow it within their borders. They never reveal their secrets, you know. Some people have come out and explained what's going on with them. They're accused of being of engaging in bullying, brainwashing, character assassination, which you know we've all seen. They have a lot of enemies. L. Ron Hubbard claims all sorts of military exploits that are provably false, as well as other unlikely adventures. They believe in a lot of really false flag stuff going on with the government and everything. Just tons of celebrities belong to them. It's just a really odd group.
See, I wonder sometimes, a lot of celebrities, it's not as if I think a lot of celebrities are probably, for lack of a better word, probably atheist, but they make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to have some sort of something to tie onto so they can do their tax write-offs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't always take things at face value, you know?
Right.
They may believe in an alien,
Well, what they believe in, Scientologists, they go through personal audits where they go through these questions to see where they stand as far as, I guess, being one with Xenu. On a thing called an electropsychometer, which measures a person's mental state. South Park has ripped on that and everything. I mean, if you've watched that South Park episode, you pretty much know what Scientology is about. They demand large donations, which, you know, I've seen that in regular churches before, too. You know, grew up in the Catholic Church and everything, just a regular Catholic church. You know, they pass the plate around, you know, during Mass and everything. But, you know, I've been inside churches, you know, whether it be for weddings or for doing, when I used to do construction work, where I would see signs like, you know, your W-2s are due by such and such a date, so we can make sure you gave 10%. And there are churches that actually stick to that 10% rule pretty stiff. Methodist churches, I see that, they do that a lot. And yeah, they'll check your W-2s and make sure that you've given the proper amount. Yeah.
Crazy.
They believe they are immortal spirits that from clusters of aliens that died on Earth. And the spirits just inhabit their bodies, and when you die, those clusters move on to the next person.
So what's the point?
Well, just you're going through life as a Scientologist with your belief, and, you know, to live life the way you're supposed to live it according to the rules of Scientology. And to give them a bunch of money.
Yeah. Fair enough.
They're forced to, they isolate themselves from everybody. They, pretty much when you become a Scientologist, you hang out with Scientologists. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, we lost Chef.
Well, he died too.
Yeah, yeah.
But still.
Have you seen the episode after he left the show?
Where they kill him?
Yeah. And they use all the old clips of his voice to go ahead and make him talk. It's just, I was watching it the other night.
Yeah, they weren't nice. But then, hey, whatever. They don't have to be nice.
Yeah, so that's Scientology. Like I said, that's definitely probably the largest modern-day cult that there is by far. But still very secretive. Some people might not consider it a cult. Might just consider it just a religion. Practice the same way you practice, you know, being a Baptist or...
But typical religions don't cloister. They don't hold you in.
Right.
You know, like you said, you go to the church across the street, they'll say hi, they'll try to get you to come back and, you know, be a part of the group.
But they won't try to destroy my name.
Right. So, and even if you're like, hey man, I went to that place and it sucks, they're probably not going to come after you.
Right.
So, that's the difference.
So, where you want to go to next?
Oh, let's see here. Where were we next? United Federated Forces of the Symbionese Liberation Army.
You love that name, huh? The SLA.
That was an American left-wing revolutionary organization between 1973 and 1975 that considered itself a vanguard army. The group committed bank robberies, 2 murders, and other acts of violence. The SLA became internationally notorious for the kidnapping of heiress Patty Hearst, abducting the 19-year-old from Berkeley, California. Interest decreased when Hearst and audio tape messages delivered to regional news media announced that she had joined the SLA. Hearst later said that members of the terrorist group threatened to kill her and held her in close confinement and sexually assaulted and brainwashed her. So, what did these guys believe in? The name Symbionese was taken from the word symbiosis, as we define the meaning of body of dissimilar bodies and organisms living in deep and loving harmony and partnership in the best interest of all within the body. These guys were left wings, feminist, anti-racist, anti-capitalist, and others. They wanted all races, genders, and ages to fight together in a left-wing united front to live together peacefully. So rather than going off and living together peacefully, they wanted
to get rid of everybody first.
They wanted to fight.
Yeah.
And then
fight they did.
They had a really cool symbol. It looks like the Hydra.
They had that going for them. You know, in 1974, they had a big shootout in Los Angeles. 9,000 rounds were shot during that shootout. Not a single police officer died. They sucked at shooting. They really should have hit the target range a lot more.
I was listening to a podcast that I like. It's called Common Sense with Dan Carlin. Dan Carlin does the hardcore history, and he also does common sense, and he takes, you know, basically what he does is he takes and analyzes current political stuff that's going on, and then he filters it through a lens of history, and tries to just make sense of what's going on. And he's talking, you know, the most recent episode, he's talking about, like, the Trump, I guess, the Trump administration, him having won the presidency, and how everybody's mad, and there was that shooting in the baseball field, the Republicans, or whatever, and there's violence on the horizon, and often you have these fringe groups, you know, you have fringe people, not fringe groups. Fringe groups are built by fringe people.
Right.
But you have fringe people that are on the edges that are just mad, and they just need something to strike the match.
Right.
And people are scared right now because there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of deep divide, there's just a whole lot of crap going on. Then he went and he read a paragraph from Richard Nixon's memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they said that during Nixon's presidency, or it was during his presidency, in 1 year of Nixon's presidency, there were 11,000 bombings, attempted bombings, and other acts of violence by fringe groups in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, bombings.
Yeah.
Like street bombings, car bombings.
These weren't just plans. These were things that occurred.
They occurred. Some of them were thwarted. Some of them, you know, they were executed, but it just didn't go off correctly, right, or whatever. 11,000 in a year. So he was like, just for perspective, a lot of times you wouldn't think, you know, if you could go back in your Wayback Machine and hit up the 70s, you don't think of it as that dangerous, but it was really, really dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot of unrest. And so comparatively, what we're looking at now is not nearly as scary as it has been in the past. So, you know, but you have these fringe people that form these fringe groups, and
They take it to the next level.
1973, two members of the SLA killed school superintendent Marcus Foster and badly wounded his deputy as the two men left an Oakland school board meeting. The hollow point bullets used to kill Foster had been packed with cyanide. The SLA had condemned Foster for his plan to introduce identification cards into Oakland schools, calling him fascist. In fact, Foster had opposed the use of ID cards in his schools, and his plan was a watered-down version of other similar proposals. Both of the men were convicted of murder. They got life sentences. Russell Little's conviction was overturned by California Court of Appeal, and he was later acquitted in a retrial. Romero remains incarcerated in San Quentin, serving his life sentence. Little has stated, who actually pulled the trigger that killed Foster was Ms. Moon. Nancy was supposed to shoot Blackburn, but she kind of botched that, and DeFreeze ended up shooting him with a shotgun. Wow. High-class people.
Yeah.
Who all want you to live peacefully.
Unless you disagree with us. Because then we're going to kill you.
Yeah. So then they kidnapped Patty Hearst.
Yep, very, very famous case.
Either forced her or didn't force her to commit a robbery. She was tried and convicted to 7 years of prison. At that point, the SLA had entirely lost sight of its goals, and it entered into a confrontation with the police, then a police dialogue. Doot-doot-doot. 400 Okay, so I kind of lost my spot here. They attempted a shoplifting. They got the police got the address of their safe house from a parking ticket in the glove box of the van. The rest of the SLA fled the safe house when they heard the events on the news. They took over a house occupied by Christine Johnson and Minnie Louisen. The next day, more than 400 LAPD officers under the command, along with the FBI, California Highway Patrol, Los Angeles Fire Department, surrounded the neighborhood. SWAT team used a bullhorn, called them out. Tear gas was used, answered by heavy bursts of automatic gunfire, and a violent gun battle began. The police were firing semi-automatics, AR-15s, and AR-180s. SLA were armed with M1 carbines, which had been converted to automatic, fully automatic. They had also created homemade grenades from 35mm film canisters and thrown at the cops. During the shootout, police continued to fire dozens of tear gas grenades into the home, trying to flush them out. About 2 hours into the shootout, the house caught fire, probably due to an exploding tear gas canister. As the house began to burn, two women left from the rear of the house and one came out the front. She had come in drunk the previous night and woken up in the middle of the firefight. All were taken into custody, but they were found not to be SLA members. Automatic weapons fire continued from the house. At this point, Nancy Ling, Perry, and Camilla Hall came out of the house. Parents working for their parents would claim that they walked out intending to surrender, and they were unarmed, but police later stated that Hall was shot in the head by police as she aimed a weapon towards them while Perry was providing cover fire. After Hall's body fell to the ground, it was pulled back inside. Perry followed Hall out of the house, firing a pistol at officers as she emerged and was shot twice in the back. The rest died inside from smoke inhalation, burns, and gunshot wounds. Coroner's report concluded that Donald DeFries committed suicide by shooting himself in the side of the head. After the shooting stopped and the fire was extinguished, 19 firearms were recovered, thousands of rounds had been fired out of the house, and police in response had fired several rounds into the house. It was the largest, it's still one of the largest police shootouts in U.S. history, with 9,000 rounds being fired, 4,000 by SLA and 5,000 by police. Every round fired by SLA members at the police missed the officers. There were no casualties among law enforcement.
I think they were like doing gangster style sideways shooting. Yeah. Yeah, this thing's on top four. I just put it to the side.
So that's them.
Yeah, and they.
So anytime somebody says we need to fight for everybody to get along, you don't want to hang out with those guys.
Yeah, 1975, they just kind of faded away once the rest of them were put in jail, and they just died off.
They had a cool symbol, though.
Yeah. Okay, do you want to talk about Om? I think, I'm not sure if you had researched that one or not.
Just, how much did you, I looked at it,
These guys, this is a murderous cult right here. This is a Japanese cult called Om Surinki, however you pronounce it. Means supreme truth in Japanese. Founded in 1984 by Shoko Asahara. Om began as seemingly innocuous yoga and meditation classes. He got people involved in it, and it's like you were saying, it was a slow build to where he was trying to get to. Attracting the patronage of students from several elite universities, who tend to be rather you can manipulate them very easily. Mm-hmm. Young minds who paid high prices for his seminars. His mixture of Buddhism, Christianity, conspiracy theory, and pop culture assimilation appealed to Japan's disillusioned intellectuals. And once again, you got some folks there that are this is the kind of people you want to try to recruit. Initiation rituals were shrouded in secrecy, but seemed to involve mind control and extreme physical test. In October 1989, cult members murdered anti-cult lawyer Tsutsumi Sakamoto, as well as his wife and young son. Then, in 1994, they decided to really step it up. They released sarin nerve gas in the city of Matsumoto, Nagano, killing 8 people. Police failed to trace the attack at the time back to the cult. So, feeling emboldened, in 1995, they released sarin in a coordinated attack on 5 trains in Tokyo subway system. Ended up killing 12 commuters, affecting over 1,000 more. That's when they realized who was doing this. They raided his headquarters on Mount Fuji and found chemical weapons, biological weapons, cultures for making biological weapons, and enough chemicals to produce sarin to kill 4 million people. So, yeah.
Wow.
These cats were planning to continue this. Like I said, after the first attack, they weren't traced back. They were kind of bold and decided to step it up and see how far they could go with the next one. But they were planning on something huge. Police found meth labs, millions of dollars in cash, gold, and cells containing prisoners. So whether the prisoners were people who had joined and wanted to leave or what, you never know. After Asahara and the leaders of the organization were convicted and sentenced to death, the group reestablished itself as Elef, saying they were disavowing violence and promising restitution to all victims. A June 2005 report by a national police agency showed that Elef has approximately 1,650 members. 650 of live communally on the compounds. But the Japanese government are watching them very closely, making sure they don't pull the same thing again. Definitely considered one of the most dangerous cults in modern history. Because, like I said, they were planning on something huge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just started off as yoga classes. Think about that.
That's some like Joker type shit.
Yeah.
You know.
Very attractive young man, too.
So he's in jail. He survived.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't come over or anything like that. Well, he was sentenced to death. So whether or not he's been killed
well,
yet.
Well, no, I mean, they got him alive. Whether he got executed or not, I don't care. But the fact that he got caught and he didn't technically escape.
Right. Yep. Yes, sir. But yeah, this could have been something really, really huge. Think about they could have killed the population of Japan if they wanted to, or close to it.
They could have killed a city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Four million
people.
4 million people. I mean, Houston's technically two, but whenever you factor
in the surrounding suburbs and everything.
Suburbs and a lot of the immigrant population and stuff like that, it's closer to four.
Right.
So, city of Houston.
That's crazy, man. Like I said, I just see how after the first one, they were just like, hey, you did it.
Man.
Let's get ready. Let's talk about the sun gods.
Solar Temple?
The Order of the Solar Temple. Some of these names are awesome. Some of them that are coming up are just hilarious.
They sound like just bad Avengers villains.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like they were writing a report, and you know how when you go to save a document, it takes the first sentence to see if you want to save it as that?
Yeah.
That's where they get the titles from.
Secret Society claims to be based on the ideals of the Knights Templar. Started in 1984 in Geneva, and later renamed the Order of the Temple Solaire. Some historians allege that the Solar Temple originates with French author Jacques Breyer, who established a sovereign order of the Solar Temple in 1952. In 1968, a schismatic order was renamed the Renewed Order of the Solar Temple under the leadership of French right-wing political activist Julian Orjas. Most notorious for being associated with a series of murders and mass suicides in 1994 and 1995 that claimed several dozen lives. Hit it. What you got?
Oh, after that, 15 of the core members committed suicide. Yeah, it was after the murders. I think a total of 38 people were murdered through gunshot, suffocation, and other means. Not to be outdone, the remaining 16 members killed each other. They did just a suicide pack thing. It was only in 1995 in France. So they were never captured. The surviving members just kind of split, went head out for a little bit. They decided to go ahead and do away with themselves too.
So,
yeah, this was a crazy group. They committed sacrifices a couple times, killing people. Killed an infant child in 1994, actually, right before the huge murder spree that they went on, killing former members and other, just non-members of their church.
Well, see, and let's get back to this.
Yeah.
So, where does that slow burn start? Okay. The aims of the Order of the Solar Temple included establishing correct notions of authority and power in the world, an affirmation of the primacy of the spiritual over the temporal, assisting humanity through a great transition, preparing for the second coming of Christ as a solar god king, and furthering a unification of all Christian churches and Islam. Okay, so first of all, Christianity and Islam are they can't coexist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can coexist, but they can't morph into each other. You're not going to have a Islamic Methodist.
If they're true, believers in their faith, it's not going
to
happen.
Like they're not compatible.
It can't happen.
So that was a big enough thing to have to worry about. And then they drew some inspiration from the British occultist Aleister Crowley, who headed the Order of the Eastern Temple from 1923 till his death in 1947, and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, a Rosicrucian order Crowley belonged to briefly. Both occult groups had a grade system somewhat similar to the Solar Temple. Another group, the Fellowship, headed by Max Heindel, also mentioned the Rosicrucian worshiping Christ as the Solar Logos, raised from the Cross magazine, although this is not Orthodox Christian doctrine. A lot of Freemason, New Age philosophy, UFOs, of course, this guy was interested in attractive, wealthy, and influential members, and was reputed that several affluent Europeans were secret members of the group.
Take advantage of your power.
Right. We'll start a cult. Call it No Fat Chicks.
One thing I found interesting. Kind of like,
yeah. You're like, man, he only had attractive women with money.
one of the reasons this one caught my eye is their feeling as though their group is based off of the Knights Templar, which were the Knights searching for the Holy Grail. How are you looking for the Holy... How do you consider yourselves...
That's what I'm saying. It's like mass murders and suicides.
It's
like we're preparing for the second coming of Christ. So let's kill babies.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what? If you're even tangentially familiar with the story of Christ, you know that the purpose of Christ's entire coming and going and resurrection was to make sacrifice obsolete.
Right.
Prior to Christ, I don't know like the timeline, because the traditional Jews, the Old Testament Jews, they believed in sacrifice, but it was like you sacrificed a lamb or a goat.
Right.
It was a blood sacrifice of some sort of livestock.
Right.
It wasn't human sacrifice. It was like a livestock sacrifice. And it was a symbolic sacrifice of your atonement for your sins.
Right.
Once Christ came, that's where the schism happened, because Christ said that he's fulfilling the pact. By him dying was a sacrifice to God for all of humanity that can be saved without having to go through the actual act of sacrifice. So therefore, like I said, and that's just a top line.
Well, the baby they killed.
But if you even know, even tangentially, if you believe that Christ existed and you're waiting for his return, you know that you're not supposed to be killing babies.
Well, the baby they killed, the reasoning behind it was that the baby was the Antichrist. And they were trying to stop him.
But you can't do that.
I know. That's their reasoning behind killing the actual baby itself. And I think the other murders were just the idea of just power. Because it was former members and... probably just detractors, but they were on a mission. They thought they were doing something right. They watched Boondock Saints too many times, I guess, and just went ahead and felt as though they needed to be the fist of God. They're out there, man. They are out there.
Well, let's get to our last two. Let's go ahead and
okay.
What you got?
Well,
on
just that? Just real quick before we get to the last two, let's go ahead and go through some of these. Just a few of the other names that we found of stuff that you can look up later. One of my favorites, the Movement for the Restoration of the Ten Commandments of God, founded by a former prostitute. Yeah. It's out of Uganda, Africa. So that's an interesting one to look through.
Did they succeed?
No, not as of yet. Another one is Our Lady of Endor Coven, which... has nothing to do with Star Wars at all. It was founded way before Star Wars in 1948, but it was one of the original Satanist groups in the United States, founded in Ohio. Currently, the Satanic Churches, they say they have about 100,000 members. They're Church Universal and Triumphant, founded in 1958, down in, I think this one was in South America. It's another one that they probably rate about three out of five nuts on that scale. And that is those. But like I said, just I love the names. Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and move away from there to our next one. This is This one's probably the most famous one in U.S. history. The one that people have talked about most. Songs have been made. You know, movies have been made. But the Manson family. Charlie Manson, patriarch, still alive in jail. Still crazy. Mm-hmm. news about him pops up every once in a while. But group of young people who followed Charles Manson in the late 1960s. Manson and his followers murdered several people, writing words to Beatles songs with their victims' blood on the walls. In American psyche, the Manson family represents the dark side of the countercultural movement of the era. So at that time, a lot of hippies were popping up, communes were popping up. Not a lot of people understood what they were. Then the Manson family popped up. People started thinking that that was pretty much the hippie movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. You know, it was, you know, they wanted their own utopia, their own little commune, but they had a very, very dark side too. Manson's followers are mostly young women. He's somehow convinced to act as his servants and prostitutes. Manson believed that a race war was brewing where the blacks would slaughter the whites, and that he and the family would emerge as the leaders of the blacks once the dust settled. Because, of course, after the blacks took care of the whites, they'd want white people leading them.
Right.
Made sense. He believed the Beatles had knowledge of his racial uprising and spoke to him directly on the White Album. Did the war started, the family went on a bloody rampage known as the Tate LaBianca murders. Currently serving life sentence in prison for conspiracy. Members of his family remained devoted to him, though. Yeah. And which one were the other ones that were jailed? Squeaky Fromm and
Tex.
There were two women that were jailed.
Mm-hmm.
There was Squeaky and one other one. I remember from the movie. I think Squeaky recently got a finished her sentence, didn't she?
I'm not sure. I don't follow Manson.
Okay. But Manson's going to be in jail for the rest of his life. I mean, he definitely a sick group.
Mm-hmm.
Faux show.
Yeah. Once again, those whenever you start hanging out with people that start talking, I mean, it's one thing. So, like, I would consider myself in a small sense, kind of, not a survivalist, but at least, like, sort of a prepper. I've been through enough hurricanes.
You some dried beef?
Street flooding, you know, that kind of stuff. I've been flooded into my house for a few days with no power and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I always keep a few things off the side, you know. And one of those things you look at, especially when a movie like The Walking or a show called like Walking Dead comes out, you're like, okay, well, if shit hit the fan, how long could I hold out, right? And so you try to like set up some redundancy. You want to make sure you have some extra batteries,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking like very, very common sense type stuff, not into the world, but
right.
You know, you want to have some extra batteries, you want to have some canned goods and food set aside, you want to have some coloring books for your kids, and you know, right. Maybe a generator, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah,
at least a power inverter. So
you see common in the South with hurricanes.
Right, so, you know, at least a power inverter so you can run your coffee pot, you know, that kind of stuff. You go online, you search some of these groups, and it's amazing how quickly people go from common sense prep stuff to, like, race wars, and you're just like, wait, what? How does trying to figure out how to make batteries shelf life longer turn into like neo-Nazi crap? Like, let me go ahead and back out of here. Like, I don't want to be part of this group. You know, that kind of stuff. But man, it's pretty prevalent. You know, you got a lot of people that just think sideways,
going to the extreme.
Oh,
taking it to the next level, you know, that's exactly what we were talking about.
And it's kind of funny because I follow this, you know, I actually do follow this one guy. He does a podcast, you know, a survival podcast, and it's very, very straightforward, like, common sense, setting up redundancies, making sure that, you know, you've got, like, your files backed up, and maybe you've got your, you know, like, what he calls this, a documentation kit. So you've got, like, your, you know, copies of your important documents.
Right, birth certificate, social security.
Maybe
card.
Stored at your mother's house or something. Right. Like, so, something to where if your house burns down, you know, it's already bad enough, but you've got some stuff, like, set up to where your life isn't completely ruined.
Right.
And he talks about the Red Dawn people. He's like, first of all, you know, you're not going to see that. That's not going to happen. If a social breakdown occurs, you're going to see riots, you're going to see civil unrest, and the government is not going to fall, it's not going to go away, It's not, you know...
Think
not,
of live free, die hard.
Right. It's like, all that's going to happen is you're going to have places that, for a while, maybe your local police force gets overrun, and so you have no rule of law, in which case you just want to lock yourself in your house and hope you have enough ammo, temporarily, mm-hmm. until it blows over. Or you're going to have excessive rule of law, and that's when they're going to come knocking on your door, you know, kind of like what happened in Katrina in Louisiana,
right.
you know, when they went door to door looking for weapons and stuff. He's like, so you just got to prepare for...
Well, the thing about it is, that hurricane is an example of both types, both sides.
Absolutely.
No, the initial reaction by the public after the hurricane with all the looting and everything else, and then the over-response by the government.
Right. And this is just what's going to happen. You know, you're never going to have a, you know, like a Red Dawn sort of situation.
Right.
And he's like, even then, if you're trying to buy a... Unless you're just a shooting enthusiast, if you're buying a long-range sniper rifle for self-defense, there's a certain point at which distance you're no longer self-defense. That's called murder.
Yeah.
So watch yourself. Yeah. So anyway, it's a fun...
But I thought he was coming here.
Yeah, it's a fun show. But yeah, it's like so many of these things start off innocently enough. You're just looking for, you know, you're looking for a place to belong, and you have a master manipulator like Manson that can really...
That sees really, it and feeds into it.
Yeah. Can really mess up your day.
I mean, think about just in high school. You know, we all knew some of those kids that were quiet to themselves, weren't really accepted by whatever groups were running around the school and stuff. You know, those are the ones that are easily influenced. The ones looking for somewhere to belong.
Disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, enough about Manson. Freaking loser.
All right. Let's go ahead. You want to kick it off or me to kick it off?
Go ahead and kick it off.
Okay. We're going to talk now about the People's Temple out of California. Very, very... better known as the Jonestown Massacre. Or the Guyana Massacre. Both. This is one, like I told you earlier, just for whatever reason, Jonestown Massacre has always fascinated me, because when I first heard the actual audio footage from the massacre itself, it just kind of... It amazed me that people were willing to just... You really saw what would happen, you know. The People's Church was started in...
1955.
Yeah, founded in 1956. It's a racially integrated church focused on helping people in need. Jones originally established the People's Temple in Indianapolis, Indiana, but then he moved to Redwood Valley, California in 1966. Jones had a vision of a communist community, just a utopia with his people, one in which everyone lived together in harmony and worked for the common good. He was able to establish this in a small way while in California, but he really wanted to have something outside of the United States where he wasn't being watched. He could just do whatever the hell he wanted to. The compound in the United States, he wanted fully under his control. You know, like I said, just to be away from the government. Because he knew that cults, you know, people were looking into him at that time. I mean, that was how long after Manson?
Well, too, he was also more, he was somewhat, on the surface, he was a somewhat legitimate minister.
Of a
Christian church.
Yeah.
The difference was with him, it was definitely a slow burn over several years. But what he did was he combined Christianity with socialist politics, mm-hmm. and racial equality. And at the time in the United States, obviously, that was pre-civil rights movement. There was still a lot of segregation. There was still a lot of just rampant racism, which... For what it's worth, you know, for our conversation, you know, the concept of progressivism and stuff, that was all starting to wake up right about then. But the concept of something like rampant racism, that word didn't even really exist at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, that's just the way society worked. Yeah. And there were people who were working on the outside and working within the systems to try to change these things. But The social order, the norm of it was that those people are over there and these people are over here, and that's just how things work. So it was kind of a bit of a radical thing, which led obviously to a lot of people being attracted to it.
Right.
Because you have progressively minded white people who don't mind if black people come to their church, And then you have a lot of different disenfranchised blacks that, you know, they
want somewhere to belong.
They want somewhere to go.
And he had a way of giving people hope, just the way he talked. He just made them feel good, made them realize that things could be possible and everything.
And if you take, you know, it's a constant conversation now. It's like with, you go on the internet and you'll start hearing people be like, oh, well, if you don't believe in, you know, if you want to cut Social Security, then you can't be a Christian because Christ said help the poor. And you counter that, like, well, Social Security didn't exist 2,000 years ago. He might have opinions on it, but we could never tell. And what so many people get away from is that the edicts of Christianity are an individual mandate. It's not a social mandate. It's not it's not give the shirt off your back to the government so the government can figure out.
It's to help your fellow man.
It's to help your fellow man.
If you see somebody in need, help them out.
And forced charity is not charity. And
taxation is not charity.
Right. So you have these somewhat, you know, tangentially similar concepts, but once you put them together, there's always going to be problems.
Right. And you know, he had this vision of, you know, what he wanted to form. And the thing about it is, in order to keep people going along with his vision, that's where the thing of him needing to establish power with people got in control. He needed to be able to control his people. And that's one of the reasons why he wanted to split and go. So in 1973, he found some land in Guyana, a small country in South America, and leased it from the government and began clearing out a section in the jungle in the middle of nowhere. There weren't any roads going there. Everything had to be built by him. He had so much money he'd work with, and that was one of the things that you learn in the film and a few other places, is that it was a pretty shitty place to live. And after a while, you know, the people were there, they realized, I want to go. You know, I want to go back to California. All building supplies needed to be shipped into the Jonestown Agricultural Settlement. Construction of the site was very slow. 1977, there were only about 50 people that lived there. And Jones was still in the United States. That all changed when he received word that an expose was about to be printed about him, because he was starting to get attention because his church was growing dramatically. This article included interviews with ex-members. And it was at that point he realized that he needed to go ahead and try to keep his place secret and keep people from leaving. You know, he had to get that control. The night before the article was to be printed, Jim Jones and several hundred People's Temple's members flew to Guyana and moved into the Jonestown compound. And that's when things kind of went to shit. Like I said, whenever the members got there, they realized it wasn't what they expected. There weren't enough cabins to house everybody, so people were just piled up in bunk beds within the cabins, and all the rooms were overcrowded. Cabins were also segregated by gender, so married couples couldn't live together. Because they haven't put everybody in the rooms together, they just put all the guys together, women together, and people just got real unhappy. Heat and humidity in Jonestown was stifling. A bunch of people got sick. It definitely wasn't, they weren't in Kansas anymore.
Right.
Members were required to work long days in the heat, often up to 11 hours a day. And throughout the compound, members could hear Jones' voice broadcast through a loudspeaker all the time. Unfortunately, Jones would often talk endlessly into the loudspeaker, even through the night. Exhausted from a long day's work, members did their best to sleep through it, but people started getting tired of it. They realized that there had to be something better. Some members did love living in Jonestown because they still fell into the message and they were just lockstep with them. And a few of them wanted to get out. But the compound was guarded and it was surrounded by miles of jungle. I mean, you went in the middle of the jungle. Right. People from California, they don't know how to get through that kind of stuff. They were armed guards on 24-hour duty, and members needed Jones' permission to leave, which he never gave. So essentially the rule was he has to give you permission to leave, but he never gave anybody permission to leave anyway. So somehow, word got to U.S. Representative Leo Ryan in California. He heard reports of what was going on in Jonestown, and he decided to go to Jonestown and check to see what was going on. So he took along a film crew and decided to go visit the People's Temple. At first, everything looked fine to Ryan and the group. However, that evening during a dinner and dance, someone secretly handed one of the NBC crew members a note with the names of certain people that wanted to split. It then became clear that some people were being held against their will in Jonestown. Okay, so now Jim Jones has broken the law. He's holding people there that don't want to be there. So now the congressman has something to go on. So the following day, Ryan said he was going to go ahead, take anyone willing to leave back to the United States. Jones couldn't let these people leave because he did
that, everything would fall apart.
Everything would fall apart. They know what was going on. So Ryan Jones acted like everything was fine, let him go to the airport, and started freaking out at that point, and sent some people's members down to follow the vehicle of Ryan with some guns, and killed everybody that was trying to leave. Killed the NBC crew member, killed Senator Ryan, who, by the way, that's the only time a United States Senator has been killed during duty, while he was actually working as his senatorial duties. Five people were killed, and the congressman actually had his throat cut. Mm. It was really bad. Okay, so at this point, Jim Jones realizes he's killed a congressman. He's killed an NBC News crew. You know, they know where they're supposed to be, and they know they're not going to get home. So he realized he needed to go ahead and take the next step. And it was at that point he decided to get everybody together in the pavilion, mix some cyanide that he happened to have for these occasions, and mix it with some Flavor Aid, and get everybody to start killing themselves. And there's actual, like I said before, you can find the audio footage of this actually happening on YouTube, and you can listen to the whole time he was still doing his speech, still talking to his members. Children were given syringes full by their parents, forced to drink it to kill themselves. People that did not want to drink it and tried to get away were shot. And you can hear all this stuff happening in the background while he's just calmly talking to everybody and telling them that they needed to do it, because if they didn't do it, the government was going to be coming for them anyway. They were going to take their children away, they were going to take everything away, and this was the only way out. Said that they'd be tortured by the government, and pretty much convinced 912 people to die, 276 of whom were children. And once it was all over and done with, he died from a single gunshot wound to the head. Some people wonder if he was killed by somebody. It's assumed that he committed suicide. All total, 918 people died, including the folks at the airport, in this one incident. So in 24 hours, in Guyana,
almost 1,000 people
died. You were talking about a guy that had control of these people. It was just...
Yeah. I've seen those pictures of all the bodies.
Yeah, there's helicopter pictures of that stuff, aerial photographs. It's just a field of dead people. They drink the Kool-Aid, go lay down, and wait.
And whenever people talk about the concept of drinking the Kool-Aid...
That's where it comes from.
That's where it comes from.
But it was actually Flavor Aid that he used, not Kool-Aid, but... people just went ahead and ran with Kool-Aid with that. Yeah, it's just horrible, horrible thing. People were manipulated, brought away from their homes.
Where do you even get cyanide?
I don't know. It was potassium cyanide, I'm sure, which I know you can get somewhere, because it's used for some laboratory testing and shit.
Still.
But at that time, you don't know if the controls were the same as they are now with being able to procure such things. But yeah, I can imagine it wasn't easy. You don't go pick that up at Walmart.
Yeah. That's all I mean, is you have enough cyanide to kill 1,000 people, just in your backpack, it's just in your bag of tricks. You know, tomorrow we might need some lumber, might have to run up the trail, buy some extra nails, and while you're at it, get enough cyanide to kill 1,000 people.
Now, some people did escape by running into the jungle, hiding out, waiting for everything to end. But, you know, think about how you are with your children as far as people... the thought of people hurting them. These people killed their own children.
Mm-hmm.
Knew what they were doing. And this one man got them to do it by saying, we all need to die. It's just horrible, man. And the thing about it is, you got to realize, you got a line of 900 people. People are already dead. And you're still in line waiting to get your punch.
Yeah.
And you're not getting out of line. You're just looking at people laying down and dying, just moving up one step at a time.
Jesus. Yeah.
This control, dude.
See, and what was weird is because I didn't know that much about it, but I was always of the opinion that they were poisoned. As in...
He tricked them, like, made dinner, put it in the punch.
Yeah, like, everybody just sat down, and everybody's like, let's toast to Jim.
Yeah.
And everybody just took a drink, and then, like, oh, crap, you know.
We willingly went with it.
That makes it all the more scary. I mean, that's absolutely horrible.
Willingly killed their children. That's the part that just always stuns me.
300 children.
like I said, you can hear him. He's just talking, explaining what they need to do. And you can hear the children crying and everything. And it's people just dying around him.
I think we should go ahead and cut this one.
Yeah, we can stop it there.
It's a little bit dark.
But it's cults. Sometimes they get that way.
Yep.
Then you have the Moonies. Remember the Moonies? You hear about the Moonies all the time. Started by, what's his name? I can't remember the guy's name. But they used to be in the airports all the time and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, that does it for this episode of the Scary Dad Podcast, now that we're very quite sad.
Yeah, let's go find something to do to pick our spirits up.
Cool. Drink a beer.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Remember, we've got the Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween show coming up on October 14th. We are about halfway sold out at this point. We're holding a few spots for a few select vendors that we want to get in. As of publication of this, we're still looking for a face painter. We want a fortune teller, and we want someone who's dealing in vintage Halloween stuff, either antique stuff or, you know, just vintage decorations or figurines or whatever. Also, you know, if you make or sell costumes, then we're looking for you too. So trying to get a good mix of vendors. We got quite a good lineup of...
Oh yeah, well, that's the cool stuff out there for everybody, for sure.
The people we've got so far, I'm pretty excited about. I don't want to reveal too much, but we're actually starting to hold the line on certain vendors so we can keep tables open for others that we're... Right. So that we can keep that diversity kicking. So if you're interested, hit me up at scarydad2@gmail.com. You know, join the forum, talk to some other people, and let us know. In the meantime, guys, that's it for now. Keep it scary.
Later. You see?